Hello and welcome to The Debate. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. Kashmir, an area caught in between India and Pakistan, is claimed by both countries and has once again witnessed violence as protesters are demonstrating against what they say was a desecration of the Holy Quran by Indian troops. Now, the soldiers opened fire and killed several protesters, reopening old wounds. Kashmiris want independence. They complain that India has no respect for them or their beliefs.
The streets of Srinagar, the largest city in the Indian-controlled Kashmir, remain mostly empty like other towns across Kashmir following a call by religious and pro-independence leaders for 3 days of strike in the valley. The uneasy calm belied simmering tensions across Jammu and Kashmir following the killing of up to 7 protesters by India's paramilitary forces on Thursday. The government in the northern state of Jammu and Kashmir imposed a curfew on Kashmir Valley and some districts of Jammu region following massive region-wide protests. Internet services were blocked and mobile phones were jammed for several hours to prevent further protests on Friday. The unrest began Wednesday night at a village in Ramban district south of Srinagar. This after 4 members of the BSF barged into an Islamic school in Dadat village overnight, beat the students and desecrated the Holy Quran. Human Rights Watch has condemned the killing of unarmed protesters by Indian security forces, calling for an independent probe into the incident. It's also called for an end to the impunity of Indian troops. For years, Indian forces have been enjoying extensive extraordinary powers, including the one stipulated under the Armed Forces Special Power Act, also known as AFSPA. The act has been at the heart of concerns about widespread human rights violations such as arbitrary killings, torture, and other forms of human rights abuses. The Kashmir region is divided between India and Pakistan, both of which claim all of the territory and fought 3 brief wars over it. Kashmir conflict dates back to nearly 6 decades ago. Thousands of people have lost their lives in the years-long conflict in the tense Himalayan region.
I'd like to welcome our guest to the program, author of Kashmir in Conflict, Victoria Schofield, out of London, and fellow Society for Policy Studies, Oday Bahashkar, out of New Delhi. Thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start it off in London. Now, protesters were demonstrating against what they called the desecration of the Holy Quran by Indian troops. In your perspective, then, why did the troops open fire with live rounds on the protesters?
Well, obviously, this is a situation which needs to have an inquiry. No forces should act with impunity against protesters. I understand the protesters were peaceful. And so clearly something's gone wrong and we need to have an investigation.
Okay, well, let me turn to New Delhi. Now, Mr. Bakhshaskar's critics say that New Delhi basically allows the soldiers to act with impunity on the ground in Kashmir. This happens all the time. Your take on that?
No, I think that is not a valid statement that the government of India allows the security forces to act with impunity. That is a perception that has been sought to be kept alive. But as a security analyst who has been working on this issue for almost 3 decades, I'd like to make the observation that the government of India is very, very careful about the manner in which the security forces have been deployed. And as you may be aware, there are 3 levels at which the security forces operate. You have the local police. They are supported and complemented by what we call the paramilitary. And finally, you have the Indian Army, which has certain operational tasks that actually relate to the line of control with Pakistan. So to that extent, my own reading is that the government of India does not allow any impunity. There are provisions within the law. And whenever there has been any such incident, the government does carry out an inquiry. I know from experience the Indian Army does carry out its own inquiries. But at the same time, I will admit that there have been killings over the last 20 years, and this is very tragic.
Let me just jump in here about you said that the government does open up inquiries. In the last 20 years, as you have said, there have been many of these scuffles and sometimes killing. People have been killed and taking place. How many Indian soldiers have paid the price for actually killing innocent protesters in the 20 years?
Well, the Indian Army has carried out inquiries, you know, within the ambit of the Army's own legal procedures, and wherever there has been any kind of evidence to suggest that the use of force has been disproportionate or that they have acted in a manner that is not in keeping with what a professional security force should do. There have been instances where the personnel have been either reprimanded or punished. But the sensitive part here, if I may really add, is the constant reference to the suggestion that there was a desecration of the Holy Quran. I would again like to submit very earnestly that this is unfortunate because this is such a sensitive subject, and the moment there is any such, I would say, quote unquote, rumor or allegation of this nature, the people get very, very emotionally charged. This is too early to come to any definitive conclusion. I agree with my colleague from London who said, let us wait for the inquiry. All I want to say is that there is another version at this point about a large number of people trying to come towards this paramilitary unit, and there was anxiety that they were trying to access the arms and ammunition. Now, if you ever visit that area, you'll know how fraught and tense it is. And this is unfortunate. Our hearts go out to the people who lost their lives, particularly in the holy month of Ramadan. So my plea is, let us wait for the inquiry report to come, and let us not emote the desecration part, because I submit earnestly that it is perhaps not as is being made out to be.
Okay, well, let's switch over. I want to switch over to comment one. If my producer is listening, that we can listen up from our Facebook page and see what our viewers have to say. Let's listen up.
Thank God at least you got time to update about Kashmir. We Kashmiris want independence from India. We want to live with Pakistan. Neither we want Pakistan nor we want India. Pakistan is more of a terrorist country than India. We want complete independence. People of Kashmir should be given full rights to decide their future. India can't occupy Kashmir on gunpoint. Resistance will be there till people's demands aren't met.
And I must say that we've had some comments actually talking about Press TV that we were not covering the situation in Kashmir. And I must say that as soon as this incident took place on Thursday, that we were the first station to go with it. But let me switch over back to London. Your take, Ms. Schoenfield, basically, why is it the case? We know that almost six decades now, basically, what was being said as far as the United Nations was that the people in Kashmir should have the right to choose their own destiny. If they want to be independent, if they want to be part of India, if they want to be part of Pakistan. Why isn't that the case? Why haven't we seen that yet?
Well, I think what you're asking is a very complicated question, which really requires six decades of history to explain it. And this is one of the big problems of the Kashmir issue. It's very complex. As you said earlier, approximately one-third of the state is administered by Pakistan, two-thirds is administered by India. This arises out of the independence of the subcontinent in 1947. As we know, Kashmir, the state of Jammu and Kashmir, was a princely state. There was supposed to have been a plebiscite following the accession of the state to India, because this was contested by Pakistan. You've really got a lot of history piled up here. And I think what really the problem is, whenever there's an outburst, whether it's an allegation of a desecrated Quran or firing by the security forces, you've got a lot of pent-up history which manifests itself on the streets. And again, I think really this is the whole tragedy of Kashmir, is that you've got these aspirations which so far have been unaddressed in certain elements of society.
Well, wouldn't holding a referendum help to actually trying to see the direction that the people want to go, besides the six decades of history and beyond? But would there be a problem with the people themselves choosing which way they want to go forward from here, staying in London?
Well, no country gives up territory voluntarily. And I think what you're really suggesting why the Indian government hasn't wanted to hold a referendum, because it doesn't want to lose any territory. Equally, nor would Pakistan want to lose any territory. But no one wants to admit that the state is divided. It's de facto been divided on the ground since 1947. But technically, the state is a disputed state between India and Pakistan. So on the one hand, you're looking at aspirations of people. On the other hand, you're looking at it as a territorial dispute between India and Pakistan. Were there to be a referendum, you've got to take into account the aspirations of all the inhabitants. And there is actually no unity amongst all the inhabitants. Those people who live, for example, in Gilgit-Baltistan in Pakistan would probably vote to stay with Pakistan. Those people who live in Ladakh would probably vote to stay with India. Already they've negotiated their autonomous hill council. Certain elements in Jammu would want to stay with India. Certain elements in Jammu might want to go to Pakistan or might want to be independent. So this is why you've got a very complex situation.
Okay, your take on that, Mr. Bhaskar. Is there any way that you think that a referendum would be able to actually solve a lot of the problems that we're seeing on the ground? Our guest in London basically said because the people are divided, but nevertheless, there's going to be some entity that would come out the majority, whether it would be Pakistan, whether it would be India, or whether it would be independence. Do you not think that actually having a referendum would be a better way of trying to solve this situation than actually occupying Kashmir?
I'd just like to add to what Ms. Schofield from London has said. She has given us a very cogent summary and drawn attention to the complexity and the baggage of history that is attached to what is commonly referred to as the Kashmir issue. And I do want to commend your television station for focusing on this and giving it the kind of time and space it deserves. Because the referendum, I'm afraid, though it may sound very, very desirable, is not an option. If you look at the manner in which India and Pakistan became independent states after the partition of 1947, the legal position is that all the states that comprised the former British India had to join either India or Pakistan, and independence, I'm afraid, was not an option. That having been said, the state of Jammu and Kashmir acceded to India, and that's where you see the beginning of the problem, where more than territory, I'd just like to suggest to Ms. Schofield that what is being contested is the idea of India versus what Pakistan has been championing. It is often referred to as the two-nation theory, which suggests that if there is a Muslim majority because of religion, that particular area should go to Pakistan. Steadfastly, India has refused to accept that proposition, saying that it is not religion that would determine whether or not a state would join India. We talk about secularism, and India makes this point that the idea of India is that it has accommodated all the diversities. So if you look at what has happened over the last 60 years, for its own reasons, Pakistan has tried to support and advance, quote unquote, the two-nation theory. Therefore, it has looked at the Muslims who largely inhabit what is called as the Kashmir Valley. And Ms. Schofield is absolutely right. There are two other large areas which are part of the erstwhile state of Jammu and Kashmir, the composite state. You have Jammu, which is one part, and you have Ladakh. So therefore, the referendum is not an option, mainly because the only legal provision after the matter was referred to the UN was to have a plebiscite. Now, there is a difference between the plebiscite and the referendum, because one of the conditions of the plebiscite is that the state has to be reverted to its original demography, meaning that the Pakistani troops and the Pakistani irregular forces, what we now refer to as the non-state, have to vacate the valley. And incidentally, about 150,000 people who lived in Kashmir of Hindu faith, they are called the Kashmir Pandits, they were ejected about 20 years ago in what can clearly be referred to as ethnic cleansing. These are all tragedies. Each of them has led to a loss of life and the disruption and the dislocation of people. So therefore, at this point, a referendum, or for that matter, the plebiscite as suggested legally, is not a viable option because nobody expects Pakistan to vacate the areas that it is in occupation of or bring the demography back to what it was in 1947. So as an analyst, I say with a lot of regret and sorrow that we can't go back to these options.
Okay, stay with me because I want to pursue something that you said, but right now I want to switch over to another one of the comments. Comment three from one of our Facebook viewers.
Thank the Almighty, Press TV has got time to speak about Kashmir. On the first day of protest, they telecasted news about Kashmir, but since then I was waiting about news on Kashmir. But, you know, it is statistically proved that India is investing 38,000 crores in Kashmir and getting 92,000 crores from here. Kashmir has potential to generate 20,000 megawatts of hydroelectricity, but yet it is generating 1,000 megawatts, and India has full control on it. Kashmir is getting its own power at 6 rupees per unit, while India is getting it at a quarter rupees per unit. What is it?
Well, Ms. Schofield, did you hear the comment of our viewer? I'd like your take on that. And in general now, what is the key to actually bring peace to Kashmir?
I'm sorry, could you just repeat your question to me? What is the key?
What is the key now to actually being able to bring peace and stability to that area? You've both basically said that it's very complex to hold a plebiscite or a referendum. So what is the answer?
Well, I think dialogue clearly is the answer. And what really is important and why you have the sort of Facebook entries you've been showing us is that there's a great deal of disillusionment in Kashmir, that they feel hard done by, they feel they haven't had a plebiscite, they feel their voice isn't heard. And no area of any large country wants to feel either taken for granted or neglected. They need to be part of the dialogue. I've spoken to so many Kashmiris during my years of research, and it's not feeling part of the dividend, the part of the peace dividend. That's why you've got these young people coming up and protesting. And you've got a sort of vested interest in a war dividend, in a belligerent dividend. And so I think what needs to be done on really both sides in all areas is to bring Kashmiris, bring the inhabitants of the former princely state to the negotiating table. I've long said that. Have a dialogue, make them feel that they're part of the dialogue and part of the negotiation for a future stability.
What about that, Mr. Bhaskar? Is it a likely scenario that is to take place soon, that there could be a dialogue and trying to be more inclusive of the people on the ground in Kashmir? Is that likely to happen?
No, I think what Ms. Schofield has said is completely unexceptionable. This is something that every Kashmir watcher who wants to see peace and stability in the region, they have all been advocating a dialogue between all parties. And here when we are talking about all parties, we are talking about India, Pakistan and the people of Kashmir. Now, Dr. Manmohan Singh, the Indian Prime Minister, he's been at the head of the Indian government for the last 9 years. And he has steadfastly said that dialogue is the only way out and that there should be no attempt to try and make any kind of territorial change by taking recourse to force. Now, this is reference to the 1999 war, which Pakistan had initiated. It's called the Kargil War. Now, from then to now, Dr. Manmohan Singh's plea has been to the people of Kashmir to say that economic development is possible only when there is peace. And for that peace, he has actually said, let us make the line of control into a line of contact. And once we are able to generate the appropriate ecosystem where there can be a dialogue, there can be contact, then I think the more complex issue about territoriality could be identified. Okay. And each time there seems to be some movement, you find that I make the point openly on Press TV that there are vested interests who actually pull the rug. And the people of Kashmir are paying a very heavy price.
Okay, and
so
on that note, I'm just about out
answer.
Of time. Let me just get a quick reaction. Ms. Schoenfield, your perspective on what was just said.
Well, I quite agree. I'm not the first person to suggest dialogue, and I certainly won't be the last person. And I think we have to keep ahead with dialogue. I would like to add that Dr. Manmohan Singh said there should be a zero tolerance on human rights abuses, and that's where we started this program. And I think part of that dialogue should be looking to the good governance of the state and making sure that security forces don't act with impunity, and then you might have a better chance at successful dialogue.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both my guests for coming to the program, author of Kashmir in Conflict, Victoria Schofield out of London, and fellow Society for Policy Studies, Mr. Uday Bakhshgar out of New Delhi. Thank you both for being with us. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us right here for the debate. Make sure you join us right here, same time, same place tomorrow. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for Press TV. Thanks and goodbye.